In the last episode, we focused on trying to identify Oswald's location before the shots were fired. Today, we'll spend most of our time looking at Oswald's whereabouts after the shots. Then, we'll talk about the brief detention of military intelligence officer James Powell and examine evidence that the power was turned off around the time of the assassination. After that, we'll make a conclusion of whether it's likely that Oswald could have been in place to fire the shots from the sniper's nest on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. After the shots were fired, Officer Marion Baker runs to the School Book Depository building and sees Oswald on the second floor.
I worked for Dallas Police Department as a motorcycle officer and signed the motorcade that day. I was approximately five or six cars back from the lead car of the motorcade. I had gotten about halfway between Maine and Houston when I heard these three shots. And immediately, I knew they was in front of me and high. And as I looked up, I saw this huge flock of pigeons flying from the top of this building. I rode my motorcycle over to the corner of the intersection, parked it, and then ran in the building, which took me a very few seconds to do this. When I got through the front doors into the lobby of the building, I asked where the elevators or the stairs would be. And one man spoke up, said, "I'm Mr. Truly, I'm the building manager." And he said, "Come on, officer, I'll show you." So he and I continued on to the back of the building and up some stairways at the back of the building to the second floor. As we came out of the second, on the second floor, I saw a window in this doorway, a man, a movement. So I went over and opened up the door, and this man was walking away from it in the next room. I later found out was a coffee room. I called to the man, and he turned around, and Mr. Truly was there beside me, and I asked him if he knew this man or if he worked there. He said, "Yes, he does." He was calm, ordinary, you know. He didn't look excited or anything like that.
Baker told the Warren Commission that there was nothing in Oswald's hands when he saw him. When asked whether Oswald appeared out of breath, Baker said no. When asked if Oswald was calm and collected, Baker responded yes. Truly, who was with Baker, said Oswald didn't seem to be excited or overly afraid or anything. When the FBI ran tests to determine how long it would take Baker to get from where he was when the shots were fired to the second floor where he saw Oswald, they found that it was 1 minute and 18 seconds. When they did the same test for Oswald, the FBI found that Oswald would have had to do all he allegedly did and get to the second floor break room in 1 minute and 14 seconds. So it is surprising to hear Baker say that Oswald appeared normal, calm, and collected. If Oswald had just sprinted from shooting the president on the other side of the sixth floor and was now standing there for only 4 seconds, the difference between the 1 minute 18 seconds it would take Baker to get there and the 1 minute 14 seconds it would take Oswald. The counter-argument is that maybe the FBI got the time wrong and Oswald was there longer than 4 seconds. Or maybe Oswald is just really, really good at pretending he's not nervous. I don't know. Some conspiracy researchers have argued that Baker wasn't even on the second floor when he saw Oswald. He was on the first floor. Where did this information come from? None other than Officer Baker himself in an interview with author Gary Savage. Baker says that he encountered Oswald on the first floor and that the investigator from Washington contacted him, but he guessed that they weren't interested in what he had to say. Baker's original story does not mention seeing Oswald through a glass window, as the Warren Report puts it. Initially, in his affidavit from the day of the assassination, Baker said this: "As we reached the third or fourth floor, I saw a man walking away from the stairway. I asked Mr. Truly if he worked there, and he said yes. It was a white man who was 5'9 and 165 pounds, about 30 years old." The fact that Baker himself is saying that he saw Oswald on the first floor and that he saw another man walking away from the stairway on the third or fourth floor is wildly contradictory to the official story. Now, there are several witnesses inside of the school book depository building whose testimony tends to support the idea that Oswald did not have time to run up to the sixth floor and then run back down to the first floor or second floor without being seen by any of his coworkers. Chief among those witnesses is Oswald himself. When Oswald was asked what part of the building he was in at the time the president was shot, he said he was having his lunch at about that time on the first floor. Oswald also said he went to the second floor where the Coca-Cola machine was located and obtained a bottle of Coke for his lunch. So according to Oswald, he bought the Coke for his lunch in advance. We'll come back to the Coke story. There are two witnesses whose testimony, if true, is harmful to the official story because what they say makes it impossible or highly unlikely for Oswald to be on the sixth floor at the time of the shooting or to be fleeing down from the sixth floor after the shooting. First, Carolyn Arnold, a secretary at the school book depository, told the FBI on November 26, 1963, that on the day of the assassination, she saw Oswald standing in the hallway between the front door and the double doors on the first floor a few minutes before 12:15. Arnold knew Oswald because he was in the habit of stopping by her desk on the second floor and asking for change in nickels and dimes. 15 years later, Dallas reporter Earl Goles tracked down Carolyn Arnold, who was still working at the school book depository. She told him that she saw Oswald in the second floor lunchroom as she was on her way out of the depository to watch the presidential motorcade. When asked what Oswald was doing on the second floor when she saw him, Arnold said, "I do not recall that he was doing anything. I just recall that he was sitting there in one of the booth seats on the right-hand side of the room as you go in. He was alone as usual and appeared to be having lunch. I did not speak to him, but I recognized him clearly." To make things even more interesting, according to Goles, the FBI did not print the correct time she said she saw Oswald. She told the FBI that she saw Oswald on the second floor at about 12:25. She was surprised at what the FBI said her testimony was when she saw it. Arnold's statement that she told the FBI she really saw Oswald on the second floor at 12:25 is a big deal if true. It would make it highly unlikely that Oswald shot the president on the sixth floor 5 minutes later, though I suppose still technically possible. It was 15 years later when Goles approached Arnold, so it's not like it's a fresh statement after the event, but Goles, the reporter, was the one who approached her. And also, how does a person forget something like that? I don't know what reason Arnold would have for lying, because as far as I could tell, she had nothing to gain. Vincent Bugliosi, in defense of the Warren Report, notes that Arnold's co-worker, Virgie Rackley, says she accompanied Arnold outside the building and did not see Oswald at any time that day. But really, this has no effect on Arnold's testimony, because all Rackley is saying in her testimony is that she was outside with Arnold. Arnold says she saw Oswald before she went outside with Rackley and did not assert that Rackley also saw Oswald. For unknown reasons, Carolyn Arnold was never asked to testify before the Warren Commission. Finally, let's look at what Victoria Adams and Sandra Stiles have to add to what we know about Oswald's whereabouts within the book depository that day. Adams was a book depository employee who testified that she went down the same stairs that Oswald would have had to traverse from the fourth floor to the first floor within 1 minute of the shooting, and she did not see Oswald. The Warren report concluded that Adams must have been mistaken about the details of her timing and ultimately discounted her testimony. Now, according to Adams, she watched the motorcade from an open window on the fourth floor of publisher Scott Forsman's office with her friend Sandra Stiles. Ms. Stiles was never interviewed by the Warren Commission. Now, on its face, Adams' testimony tends to show that Oswald could not have come down the stairs from the sixth floor because Adams would have seen him or at least heard the footsteps in the stairwell. But because Adams did not see or hear Oswald on the stairs, her testimony puts a wrench into the official story. However, the Warren report specifically addressed why it found that Adams' testimony was not credible. It says that after Adams got down the stairs, she noticed Bill Shelley and Billy Lovelady, and she told them what she had just seen in the fourth floor window. Now here's the kicker. The Warren report says that the two men went to the rail yard after the shooting and then returned to the school book depository building before Adams saw them. So if they had time to go to the rail yard, then Adams must be mistaken in what she said because she would not have seen them immediately after because they would have been at the rail yard at that time. Warren Report critics have noted that in Shelley and Lovelady's affidavits, there's no mention of them running to the rail yards after the shots, which one would expect to be included. Bugliosi and Warren Report defenders say that this is not a big deal because first day statements are typically very brief, and further argues that anybody who makes this argument that the Shelley and Lovelady affidavits are not consistent with the Warren Report is really being misleading because the total statements were only one paragraph each. So, you know, he's saying these are really short statements. They're not going to include the whole story. But as Warren Report critic James D. Eugenio points out, it wouldn't have been very hard for either man to simply write, "I went over to the rail yards," if they actually did go over to the rail yards. In later interviews, both Victoria Adams and Sandra Stiles say that they left the rear of the office within seconds before the limousine disappeared beneath the underpass. So that's immediately. Neither Stiles nor Adams saw Lovelady or Shelley when they got to the first floor. Adams says that she did get a chance to correct her deposition, and she did not remember the part about seeing Shelley and Lovelady being in her deposition. She says, "If it had been there, since I didn't see them, I would have edited it out." Now, there is even more confusion over Adams' affidavit and initial interview. In her November 25th, 1963 FBI interview, Adams doesn't mention Lovelady or Shelley. But in February of 1964, Adams was visited by Dallas police officer Jim Lavelle. Lavelle said that there was a fire at the Dallas Police Department and her file had been burned. He told her that the police needed to take her statement again. It was in this statement that Arnold is first on the record as saying she saw Lovelady and Shelley. To recap, Adams and Stiles both say that they went down the stairs immediately after the shots were fired. There's only one set of stairs in the building, so they would have been going down the same staircase as Oswald at about the same time. The Adams and Stiles statements are pretty strong in defense of Oswald not being in position to come down from the sixth floor to the second floor in time to see Officer Baker. But where it gets really weird is the shenanigans with the Dallas police and Jim Lavelle. The very first time the story about Adams seeing Shelley and Lovelady enters the record is after Jim Lavelle took Adams' statement again 3 months after the first time he took her statement, because the first one happened to burn in a fire. So really, the Warren Report critic argument is that Adams never saw Shelley or Lovelady, and the whole thing was a fabrication to undermine the truth. Now, if this was one of only a few evidentiary anomalies in this case, it would be easy to write it off as a coincidence. But as you'll see, there are a few more. There's even another weird evidentiary story about Adams' testimony. Researcher Barry Ernest went to the National Archives looking for the original stenographic copy of Adams' testimony that's consistent with the final Warren Report story, including the part about Shelley and Lovelady going to the rail yards. He found it, but the document is unsigned. So Ernest asked the National Archive, why was it not signed? What does that mean? And they said that there's two versions of the documents, and only the second version is signed after there are corrections. So then Ernest asked for the tape recordings of the interviews, and he found out that the Adams, Lovelady, and Shelley tapes are all missing and cannot be found. One final point on Adams. Her story that she went downstairs immediately after the president was shot is also supported by testimony from Dorothy Garner, Adams' supervisor. In a letter from Mary Jo Stroud, a secretary on the Warren Commission, to its general counsel, J. Lee Rankin, it says, quote, Miss Garner, Miss Adams' supervisor, stated this morning that after Miss Adams went downstairs, she, Miss Garner, saw Mr. Truly and the policeman come up. Now, if the Warren Report's story is correct, then Dorothy Garner would have seen Mr. Truly and Officer Marion Baker before Adams went downstairs. But Garner says it was the other way around and that Adams went downstairs first.
The ultimate conclusion of the Warren Report was that Adams left the fourth floor several minutes after Oswald. The Warren Report does not mention anything about Shelley and Lovelady failing to include their trip to the railroad yards in their first day affidavits.
There's another key witness whose testimony supports the idea that Oswald could not have been the lone assassin. Lillian Mooneyham says that she saw a man behind a sixth floor window of the school book depository about 4 to 5 minutes after the shots were fired. According to the FBI report, quote, Mrs. Mooneyham estimated that it was about 4 to 5 minutes following the shots fired by the assassin that she looked up towards the sixth floor of the school book depository and observed the figure of a man standing in a sixth floor window behind some cardboard boxes. This man appeared to Mrs. Mooneyham to be looking out of the window. However, the man was not close up to the window, but was standing slightly back from it so that Mrs. Mooneyham could not make out his features. She stated that she could give no description of this individual except to say that she is sure it was a man she observed because the figure had on trousers. Officer Marion Baker's testimony helped to establish a timeline that, according to the Warren Report, put Oswald on the second floor within 1 minute and 18 seconds of the shots being fired. Now, if Lillian Mooneyham is right, and there was, in fact, a man on the sixth floor 4 to 5 minutes after the shots were fired, we know that Oswald could not have been that man because Oswald had already had his encounter with Officer Baker by that time, and he would have been on his way out of the building. The police did not reach the depository to search for the assassin or evidence until around 1 p.m., about 30 minutes after the shots were fired. So whoever that was that she saw likely would have been involved in the assassination. The Warren Commission did not interview Lillian Mooneyham.
Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC. It's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these, so when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click Shop by Mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. So visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Now that we've looked at all the key witness statements, let's put together a timeline of what happened based on those statements. At 11:30, Oswald asked Charles Givens to send the elevator back up to the sixth floor so that he can come down for lunch. Now, this is per Givens' original statement to the FBI, not his final Warren Commission testimony. At 11:45, Williams and Lovelady see Oswald on the fifth floor, and Oswald asks to send the elevator back up because he's coming down for lunch. At 11:50, Charles Givens, according to his initial story, says that he sees Oswald reading a paper on the first floor. Also at 11:50, Supervisor Bill Shelley sees Oswald on the first floor. At noon, Eddie Piper, a janitor at the building, sees Oswald on the first floor as well. At 12:15, a rifle is sighted in the window for the first time by a Dealey Plaza spectator, Arnold Rowland. Also at 12:15, Carolyn Arnold, a secretary at the school book depository, saw Oswald eating his lunch alone. Now, this is according to the Warren Report. Between 12:05 and 12:20, Bonnie Ray Williams ended his lunch on the sixth floor and left the sixth floor. Now, the FBI says the lunch ended at 12:05. Bonnie Ray Williams tells the Warren Commission, and they agree that the lunch ended at 12:20. At 12:25, Carolyn Arnold sees Oswald on the second floor per her later correction of the Warren report to Earl Goles. Around 12:30, the shots are fired at the motorcade. Immediately after the shooting, Jack Doherty, who was on the fifth floor, took an elevator to the sixth floor. The elevator is within a few feet of the stairs, and Doherty did not see or hear Oswald coming down the stairs from the sixth floor. Also, immediately after the shooting, Victoria Adams and Sandra Stiles run down the fourth floor stairs and do not see Oswald or hear anyone coming down the stairs per their own testimony. If you believe the Warren report, then Adams and Stiles came down the stairs several minutes later after Oswald had already had his encounter with Officer Baker. 75 to 90 seconds after the shooting, Officer Marion Baker sees Oswald on the second floor of the building in a break room, according to the Warren report, or the first floor, if you believe what Baker told Gary Savage. 4 to 5 minutes after the shooting, Lillian Mooneyham sees a man behind a sixth-floor window in the school book depository. So we looked at the statements and we looked at the timeline, but let's dive into one more disputed question that may help us make a decision one way or the other as to whether Oswald could have been in place for the shots. Did Oswald have a Coke in his hand immediately after the shooting when Officer Baker saw him? Why does it matter? If he did, then that means it would have taken him a few more seconds to buy the bottle of Coke once he got to the second floor landing, which would be unlikely since Officer Baker said Oswald wasn't out of breath. If he didn't have the Coke, it makes it more likely that Oswald could have sprinted down the stairs from the sixth floor where he allegedly saw Officer Baker on the second floor. Oswald tells police during interrogations that he was on the first floor at the time of the shooting, eating a cheese sandwich, although he had gone up to the second floor to get a Coke. Oswald also said that he was drinking a Coca-Cola on the second floor in the lunchroom when the officer saw him. But what does the record say about the Coca-Cola?
Almost a year after the assassination, on September 23rd, 1964, Officer Baker signed an affidavit that he, quote, saw a man standing in the lunchroom drinking a Coke.
In the affidavit, Baker crossed out the words drinking a Coke and initialed the change. Mrs. R.A. Reed, a clerical supervisor, saw Oswald walk through the clerical office on the second floor at 12:32 holding a bottle of Coca-Cola. The Warren Commission's senior counsel, Albert Jenner Jr., said on WNYC television on December 23, 1966, that Oswald was, quote, drinking a bottle of Coke when the first policeman on the scene saw him. Would Oswald have had time to get a Coke after shooting the president and running down the stairs and not be out of breath? Why would Oswald even get a Coke unless he was just eating his lunch? The Warren Commission decided Oswald had just barely enough time, after he shot the president, to hide his rifle in the opposite corner of the sixth floor and then run down four flights of stairs where he encountered Officer Baker. Yet, according to Baker and Truly, Oswald was composed. In my research on the events that transpired at the Texas School Book Depository that day, I came across the name of military intelligence officer James Powell. Powell is the guy who conspiracy theorists often cite as the intelligence operative that the police arrested and then let go. The idea is that Powell could have been one of the conspirators who shot Kennedy that day, but the police let him go as he was escaping. So what is the truth about James Powell? The only information that exists in the record about him are a famous photo that he took, which is included in the Warren Report volumes, and an interview that he did with the Assassination Records Review Board in 1996. Powell told the ARRB that he took time off from work that day to see the president land at the airport and to see the motorcade in Dealey Plaza. Powell was a sergeant in the 112th Military Intelligence Division, where his job was to conduct background investigations for security clearances. His office was just blocks away from Dealey Plaza in the Rio Grande building. Powell, who was standing right in front of the school book depository, used his camera to take a photo of the building immediately after the shots were fired. Then he went into the school book depository building to use the phone to call his office to let them know what had happened. At that point, he was detained by the police before he could make a phone call. After about 45 minutes, he was let go. Given that there is no counter evidence that proves Powell's story wrong, I tend to believe Powell. I don't have any reason to think that he was involved in the assassination of the president. For those who say, well, he was military intelligence, isn't that shady? My answer is, possibly, if there is additional evidence to show his involvement in a conspiracy that day. But I just don't see any here. So while James Powell's presence is not a smoking gun, the one photograph of his that was shared with the Warren Commission does offer potential proof of conspiracy. Powell's photo, taken moments after the shots were fired, was reviewed by the photographic panel of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. They compared it with other photos that were taken before it and concluded that, quote, there is an apparent rearranging of boxes within 2 minutes after the last shot was fired at President Kennedy. Now, the counterargument is that the photos were taken at different angles and that we really can't be sure if the boxes were moved. But the HSCA examined that argument and determined that it wasn't credible. If you believe the HSCA that the boxes in the sixth floor window were rearranged in the 2 minutes after the shots were fired, then that is either one more thing that Oswald would have had to do before he went down the stairs and saw Officer Baker 1 minute and 18 seconds after the shots were fired, or that's not Oswald who's moving the boxes, which means that some other unknown person was. One other thing that happened that day at the school book depository is that the power was suddenly cut off to the building right around the time of the assassination. We know this from the testimony of several witnesses. Geneva Hines says that all of the lights went out and the phones were dead as the motorcade approached. Sheriff Luke Mooney said that the power was on when he arrived, but was later cut off as the elevator stopped working while he was on it. Victoria Adams, who we talked about earlier, told the Warren Commission that the elevator was not working at the time she went down the stairs. I don't have a clear theory for what this means, but it is worth noting that the power apparently went out at the school book depository right around the time of the assassination, but did not go out at any other nearby building. So back to the big question for this episode. Where was Lee Harvey Oswald at 12:30 on November 22, 1963? Clearly, if Oswald was alive to stand trial for the murder, there would have easily been enough doubt raised through the testimony of Victoria Adams, Sandra Stiles, Dorothy Garner, and Carolyn Arnold that puts a reasonable doubt as to whether Oswald could have been in place on the sixth floor at 12:30. The testimony of Adams was dismissed by the Warren Commission. Arnold and Stiles were both completely ignored by the commission. I find their stories at least as credible as the Warren Report. Even if you believe that Arnold was lying to Earl Goles and she saw Oswald at 12:15 and not 12:25, if that were true, then Oswald could not have been the man that Arnold Rollins saw holding a gun on the sixth floor at 12:15 because he would have been eating his lunch on a lower floor. Whether or not Oswald had a Coke in his hand when Baker saw him, I'm persuaded by the Warren Report testimony from Officer Baker and Truly that Oswald was calm and not out of breath when standing on the second floor. I find it unlikely that someone could shoot the president in one corner of the building, run to the other corner of the sixth floor to hide the gun, and then run down the stairs and be neither seen nor heard by witnesses, even though Stiles and Adams were in the stairwell and Daughtry was next to it on the fifth floor, only to encounter a police officer about 4 seconds later, according to the FBI's reconstructed timeline, and not be out of breath. Oh, and from the record, it looks like Oswald probably bought a Coke during that 4 second period. On top of that, Baker later corrects what the Warren Report said and says that he saw Oswald on the first floor and saw someone else on the fourth floor who Truly said worked there, which was ignored by the Warren Commission. Carolyn Arnold says she saw Oswald on the second floor at 12:25, though the Warren Commission says that she saw him on the first floor around 12:15. Now, whether I find Charles Givens to be credible doesn't really matter because his testimony merely puts Oswald on the sixth floor 30 minutes before the shooting. I find Harold Brennan to be a credible witness, but he didn't identify Oswald when given the chance in a lineup and he was looking up six floors. To me, Brennan's testimony stands alone and is not enough to overcome the other witnesses who put Oswald on lower floors at the time of the shooting, or at least not fleeing from the sixth floor after the shooting. The testimony of Rowland, Worrells, and Walther establishes that there was someone with a rifle on the sixth floor of the school book depository. But Walther and Rowland testified to seeing two men together at the same time, and Lillian Mooneyham says there was someone on the sixth floor 4 or 5 minutes after the shots were fired. The HSCA's review of the James Powell photo also suggests that someone was moving the boxes shortly after the shots were fired. If these claims are true, then the Warren Report conclusion that Oswald was the lone gunman cannot be. I asked some of the strongest Warren Report defending Facebook groups for their best argument that Oswald was in place to fire the shots. And aside from the Brennan and Givens testimony, the primary point made in defense of the Warren Report regarding Oswald's ability to be in place is that all of the other evidence in the case against Oswald is so strong. His gun, the fact that he killed Officer J.D. Tippit, allegedly. The fact that he fought with the cop and had a gun when he was arrested in the Texas theater, etc. All the other disputed issues that we haven't gotten to.
The testimony regarding Oswald's whereabouts when the shots were fired is cloudy enough that if all of the other evidence in this case weighs against Oswald and it looks like he did it, you could say that Oswald had to be in position to fire those shots regardless of what the witnesses say, because someone had to fire the shots, and if not Oswald, then who? I get that argument. Just remember that this issue of could he have been in place is one disputed issue among hundreds that we'll be covering. The answer to whether Oswald likely could have been in place to fire the shots is a big issue, but we can't decide the whole case until we review all the evidence. But having said that, I conclude that Oswald could not likely have been in place to fire the shots from the southeast corner of the sixth floor of the school book depository building. Reasonable people can certainly disagree, but to me, the weight of the evidence leans in that direction. What do you think? Next time on Solving JFK, we'll continue our examination of the events at the school book depository building that day. How and when did Oswald allegedly get the rifle into the building? Did any witnesses see anyone fleeing from the building after the shooting? Where did Oswald go after the shooting? If you heard anything on this episode that lacks context or you think is incorrect, please let us know. You can email solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide a citation and we'll consider it for a future rebuttal episode.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com for more information.